This is the Cardboard Cave Podcast. You are fools, go!
Yes, I did. Hey guys. Ooh, my camera's out of focus. As you guys know, my name is Christopher. I'm one of the guys here at the Cardboard Cave Podcast. Today we are not starting off with our host, John. He's having some electrical issues, as our wonderful island is known for. But tonight we are going to be discussing some Lord of the Rings spoilers for that upcoming collaboration set, which is hopefully going to be really cool. Tonight, joining me is the master of the cube, the master of the dark arts himself, our other host, JP.
Hey, what's up?
What's up, my dude? I'm doing pretty good on my end. I'm kind of just super excited for what we got coming for those Lord of the Rings spoilers. Want to jump right into it, or what are we getting into?
I'm a bit tired, but I'm pretty good myself. I'm excited too. I'm very excited, actually, especially after seeing one of the particular cards. I really hope that the other card that goes with it is good. And we'll get to that when we start discussing the cards.
All right. So, I wasn't supposed to put that in there yet, but since we're already here.
Let's start with the box toppers. Top to bottom. Bottom to top.
You say. Bottom to top. So wait, these lands are box toppers?
Yes.
And the party tree? Wait, hold on. Like, roll it back here for me. Come on. Like, well, go ahead.
The Valley of Gorgoroth, also the real magic card being Wasteland, is a land. You can tap it to add a colorless, or you can tap it to sacrifice it and destroy target non-basic land. That is a card that is coming as a box topper, if I'm not mistaken. That box topper has the set symbol for the commander decks, so it will not be modern legal.
I mean, in theory, right?
No, it's
still a wasteland, no?
Because new cards that are box stoppers can be modern legal.
Oh.
They made these box toppers have the commander set specific, like the commander set symbol specifically, so they are not modern legal.
Yeah, I actually didn't know that about the legality of box toppers.
So, in Snaring Bridge, which is the bridge of Khazad Dûm, is already a modern legal card. But in order to maintain some type of
consistency,
they also have the commander set symbol.
Gotcha.
But it is a modern legal. And then the party tree, which
my
is
favorite.
The Great Henge. I didn't explain the Bridge of Khazad Dûm. It's creatures with it's a 3 mana. It's an artifact. Creature with power 3 with power greater than the number of cards in your hand can't attack. And the party tree is 7 green. It's a legendary artifact. This spell costs X less, where X is the greatest power among creatures you control. You can tap it to add green and gain 2 life, and then whenever a non-token creature enters the battlefield under your control, put a +1 counter on it and draw a card. These are the, if I'm not mistaken, these are the 3 box toppers. Only Wasteland is the not modern legal one. They had all the commander set symbol in order to for consistency, but Bridge of Khazad Dûm and the party tree are modern legal.
Nice.
Right. What do you think of these box toppers?
I mean, they look pretty. I really enjoy that we got the party tree as like an actual like thing. Like, I would have never thought of the party tree as like being in the set, I guess. Like, I it took me by surprise and I enjoy it. Both the bridge and like the way like the art in both for Ensnaring Bridge and Wasteland, that just looks freaking amazing. I like how you can see the little detail of like, you know, it's Mount Dûm in the background, and then Frodo and Sam, just, and the flavor text I think is great. Like, I don't really have anything to say about these cards other than just compliment how beautiful they all look.
I'm very much interested in that value of Gorgoroth. Like, I am.
They look amazing, man.
I am not a huge fan, like we've already said this before, of like reskins. This is the way to do them, and they are nice. I'm not a huge, like, I like them. It's not that I don't like them, but I'm not a huge fan of them. But when they're done like this, with specific cards that work exactly like what you think they'd be, then it's perfect. Yeah.
All right, so next up, you want to do these from right to left or left to right?
Let's go right to left so we can talk about the different arts and the how this is very unique.
All right, so over here, starting from right to left, we got the three soul rings. These three soul rings being representative of the three, like three of the many rings, right, that were given onto the denizens of Middle-earth. If I'm not mistaken, the first one is the one for the elves. Is that?
Yes, the one with the crown and the hand. That is the ring of man.
Ring of man. My bad.
The one on the stone tablet, and you can see on the far right, top right of the art, you can see a beard. That is for the dwarves. And then the one with the tree and the very goldish colors is from the elves. Note, there are going to be non-foil versions of these cards.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's the foiled, rainbow foiled, serialized number of these cards.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if you haven't noticed, the numbered are 1 out of 300 for the elves, 1 out of 700 for the dwarves, and 1 out of 900 for the humans. It's because there are 3 rings for the elves, 9 rings for the humans, 7 rings for the dwarves, but only one ring to rule them all.
Yeah.
So it is very, they really went deep on that lore, and that makes them even more rare, because like technically the elven one will be rarer than the dwarven, and the human one
and so on.
But it's in terms of rarity, the elven one is rarer than the dwarven one, which is rarer than the human one.
Yep.
The art on these cards, beautiful. I am currently foiling out Ozgear. He's my favorite deck. I am already 52% done, which is it's a 100 card deck, so it's 52 cards of them done. And I already have a Sol Ring foil. But man, that Dwarven Sol Ring.
Yep, that's exactly what I was thinking. He's a dwarf, isn't he?
Want
he's a giant.
He's a giant. He's a giant. But the art and like the beard, the art, the stone tablet, it just fits perfectly.
Sick.
I really do want to talk about Sam, though.
Sam, loyal attendant. We haven't seen the adventurous, like Frodo adventurous hobbit yet, right?
This is what I was talking about. So, Sam, loyal attendant. 1 green and a white for a 2/4 legendary creature, halfling peasant. He has partner with Frodo, adventurous hobbit. And partner with is when this creature enters the battlefield, target player may put Frodo into their hand from their library and then shuffle. So if it happens to be in your, like if you're running them inside a deck and you play Sam, you get to tutor for Frodo.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
His ability is at the beginning of combat on your turn, create a food token. And activated abilities of food you control cost 1 less to activate. It's just 1 mana to sacrifice a food and draw and gain 3 life.
When they're partner with, you can still have them both in the command zone, right?
Yes. So
just to like clarify,
you can have them both in the command zone if you were to run them in the deck. And like, let's say you're a 5-color deck and you're running them.
Yeah.
And you play one of them, you tutor for the other piece you have, you're missing. That's how partner with works. And this is coming in the commander set. the commander set, the commander card and the commander name for this particular one is Fellowship and Food, or Food and Fellowship. I think it's Food and Fellowship. And a lot of the theories is that Sam is the food aspect of the Fellowship. So we're thinking Frodo will be the Fellowship part. Hopefully it does something related to food, or something related to something that they synergize with. So if one cares about food, maybe the other one gives something to food. I don't know.
Hope.
Or something, because it says activated abilities of food you control cost one less. So what if Frodo gives an additional ability to food?
Hmm.
Then that would cost one less because of Sam.
Yeah.
So Sam makes the food, Frodo uses the food. That would be very flavorful. Another reason why is that there are not many Abzan, if any Abzan commanders that care about life gain.
Mm.
The only ones off the top of my head are partner pairing, known as Timna and Ikra Shiriki, because Ikra cares about life gain, and with Timna you get Abzan colors. But for the most part, I'm very excited for this. I really like Sam. Sam's one of my favorite characters. Would you like to continue with the next card?
Oh yeah, I'm gonna get to Radagast in a second, but one thing I did want to mention about like Sam, I do believe that if we don't get anything that's like that gives foods activated abilities or anything, I think it would most likely, and what I'm kind of hoping it is up to a certain degree, is Frodo having an ability that says, oh, whenever you sacrifice food or whenever you sacrifice an artifact, X or Y happens. Like, I might be wrong, but it would be kind of cool. At least, there's like Sam lets you reduce the cost of of the food being sacrificed, and then Frodo would just like capitalize off of you sacrificing the food, and then you'd get the life gain on top of that. Like I feel like that's like just getting like a bunch of value for just one mana for like eating a food. I think sounds great. Moving on to Radagast, Wizard of the Wilds. He comes down for 2 colorless mana, 1 green and 1 blue, so total converted mana cost or mana value of 4. He's an avatar wizard. He has ward 1. Beasts and birds you control have ward 1. Whenever you cast a spell with mana value 5 or greater, choose 1. Create a 3/3 beast creature token. Create a 2/2 blue bird creature token with flying. I don't love Radagast, but I think it's cool that it's the kind of commander that functions by himself. Meaning all you have to do, especially in these colors, is just stick a bunch of like big spells, something like extra turns could even work really well here. You're just gonna keep making creatures every time you cast, for example, an extra turn spell, and then just like you just use the creatures like during those extra turns to like run over your opponents. I can't think of any synergies off the top of my head that would be like, oh, cast big spell, make creature, use creature for some other thing to gain more value.
Well, I can. There's 2 cards that come to mind immediately.
Yeah, go ahead.
So Radagast is a 4 mana card, and he's a 3/5.
Mm-hmm.
You know what's a 5 mana card and a 3/5? Thanos the Toymaker.
Oh, okay.
Thanos, which came out in Brothers War, was pretty, like, nobody really talked about him. He was just there. Because his ability is just weird. I don't know why Wizards is pushing beast and birds to be a thing, but Thanos the Toymaker is 3 green and a blue, so 5 mana for a 3/5 legendary creature human artificer. And his ability is, whenever you cast a beast or bird creature spell, you may copy it, except it's an artifact in addition to its other types.
Mm-hmm.
So you play this on 4, you play Thanos on 5. You cast any beast or bird, you profit.
If I'm not seeing like a combination of burst or beast or birds here that are like, you know, that gives me like a clear line in my head, I guess.
I'm just saying that they're pushing this, so I'm there's probably gonna be more synergies eventually. It's like eventually there's gonna be something to build around with this. Also, something I forgot to mention about Sam. He says activated abilities of foods you control cost one less to activate. Ginger Root becomes haste and unblockable. Becomes unblockable for free.
That's interesting.
That's funny.
That's potentially efficient. I like that. Put a hammer on him. Mm. I'm just saying, that's a hammer time free hasty. Come on. At least last note on like Radagast and like the whole beasts and birds being pushed. My theory so far, like my working theory so far, is that we'll finally have the question of why they're pushing beasts and birds answered in Ikoria, and that's what I'm like hoping for, because beast I think was a pretty prevalent creature type in Ikoria.
Yes.
So I think that's where we might have an answer, especially. There's a possibility we're not going back to Mutate, but it would be really cool if we got Mutate back in Ikoria to be able to support the Mutate cards we already have.
Yes, Mutate was like the reality of it is Mutate's an easier mechanic than a lot of people say it is.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people are just afraid of the Mutate mechanic because it can become like a bit complicated, but it's pretty easily. It's easy. It's basically like you just, it's an enchantment. Each creature with Mutate has an enchantment.
It's just a bestow enchantment with extra stats.
Yeah, exactly.
I would even argue it's technically a better bestow enchantment. I can't think of a lot of cards that have Mutate that I'm like, oh, that's so broken, because there aren't enough Mutate cards. All right, so that's all for the commander cards. Moving on, we got these amazing, ridiculously beautiful basic lands that form like, you know, the whole
map
of Middle Earth, and I am absolutely in love with it.
Depending on how good Frodo is, and if I want to make that Sam and Frodo deck, I might get some of these. Otherwise, I'm not too sold. It's fun. They look nice, but
I just want the whole map, man.
It's a map.
Yeah, and I just want to have the whole map. I think it would look really cool, and I don't know. I just like it. I enjoy like map art to me is one of those things in art that I very thoroughly enjoy, and this is just tickling that spot, and I enjoy it. Moving on, we're getting our first stuff that's actually going to be in the set, starting off with Reprieve. There is many things to be said about Reprieve. It is an instant that comes down for one colorless and one white mana, and it returns target spell to its owner's hand, and you get to draw a card. Right off the bat, you would think, hey, like it's essentially a white counter spell, which is already great. It draws you a card, so it's like the white version of Arcane Denial, essentially. On top of this, it's a piece that you can use to protect your own stuff, as well as we're talking about preventing like a loss from out of someone playing around your Thassa's Oracle, for example. We're talking about being able to kind of the same deal in that case, but also becoming like potentially becoming like a way to continue like any kind of combos or continue any kind of synergies. I think JP, you had mentioned one with
Storm.
With Storm, yes.
So when you cast a spell with Storm, all the Storm copies go on the stack, and you can cast a Reprieve the same way you could have casted a Remand. Countering your, like with Remand, you would have countered the original spell, put it back into your hand, and then draw a card. This just, instead of actual direct counter, it just returns it to your hand and then draw a card. That's a synergy right there. One of the things about this is, like, you need, what's it called? You need to be in white. That's one. Mm-hmm. And for the most part, at least in Commander, this is like, unless you don't have access to blue. If you have access to blue, then this is just not that good. Otherwise, it's just okay. I found myself, like, I recently made a mono white deck, and I found myself really not caring about a lot of spells, because my list has been very focused on what it wants to do, and doesn't really care. At least maybe it's because it's a bit more casual, so it doesn't really care about some game-winning spells. It's just, okay, I guess I just go for another. Because depending on a one-off in my 100-card deck feels bad.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe if I added Mana Tithe and the other few character spells in white, maybe then it would be like, okay, this feels more of a consistent effect. Because that's mean. I like
I just thought of it. I just thought of it more as a 2-mana draw spell.
That's also that's a very, very good way to look at it.
Yeah, that's what I thought. Like, when I saw it initially, I just saw a white spell that's decently costed that draws you a card with an upside. Like, there's like, it's this is like what we've been asking for a while now, you know. And also for like examples in which, let's say, I find myself a lot of times, like while playing blue, casting, for example, my Time Warp with exactly 5 mana, you know, no additional mana to spare, because I'm trying to like continue a thing going. Getting reprieved in a moment like that is like a huge like upside. So I just see no downside to running reprieve, like in any situation, unless, I don't know, your opponent's running Storm.
Yeah, I understand.
We got You Cannot Pass, which you know, just the famous line with the famous scene of Gandalf just messing with the bridge, so that the buddy here, I forgot his name right now, the Balrog, falls to his not exactly death, but just falls and can't get to the rest of the Fellowship. It destroys target creature that blocked or was blocked by a legendary creature this turn. So essentially, we cast You Cannot Pass to make every creature Gandalf, every legendary creature Gandalf.
Yes.
We also got. I want you to take this one, because I also noticed that this next one is different from what we saw originally.
Yes. So unlike with the leaks, this is a proper teaser. So we got an uncommon version of what we assume would be the rare version, or maybe even mythic version, of Golem. So this is Golem, Patient Plotter. 1 and a black for a 3/1 legendary creature, Halfling Horror. When Golem, Patient Plotter leaves the battlefield, the ring tempts you. You can pay a black, sacrifice a creature, and return Golem from your graveyard to your hand. Activate only as a sorcery. So, how good this card is really dependent on how good the mechanic of the ring tempts you is.
Yeah.
But it's interesting how it also kind of, like lore-wise, fits. Because he's just a really persistent little dude.
Yeah. Alright, so up next, we got Samwise the Stout-Hearted. He's obviously a halfling peasant. He comes down for 1 colorless mana and 1 white mana. He has flash. He's a 2/1. And when he enters the battlefield, you get to choose up to 1 target permanent in a graveyard that was put there from the battlefield this turn. Return it to your hand, then the ring tempts you.
Again, this is nice. This is giving white an effect it already had, because this is just a Faith's Reward, Second Sunrise type effect. It is stapled onto a creature, and it already does something white has, but it hasn't been doing consistently. I feel like and this is probably now going to be a hot take. I feel like Wizards has recently given a lot of power to white to the point where it is no longer one of the weakest colors. I know a lot of people would disagree, but I don't think it's like one of the weakest colors right now.
To be fair, it was only one of the weakest colors in Commander.
Yes, but when you looked at the time when we were calling the weakest color, you could see Modern, and in Modern it was basically non-existent. Right now, if we even look at Modern, in fact, I'm gonna put up the Modern metagame right now, because it's actually very interesting how white has become a bit more prevalent. This is the standard metagame, the Modern metagame. So, Hammer Time is the main driver for white.
Gotcha.
That's it. Because Burn has white, but Burn has white because of Lightning Helix. The four color Omnath decks also have white, but it's Solitude and Omnath.
Hey, don't they also run that one removal spell?
Yeah, Prismatic Ending.
March.
Prismatic Ending is also pretty good. Then Domain Zoo, which also does not have, like, as Dromoka's command, Lightning Helix, and they're just multicolored cards anyway. So,
white is just, like, I still stand on the point that white, even when it was still considered, like, the weakest color, it's just, I would say it's one of the best support colors, if not the best support color.
I'd say it's the second best support color.
First one being
black.
I haven't thought about that too much. I mean, I guess it just, you know, at its worst, black just tutors literally anything. Like, if you're not running anything
you're
else that's black in the deck, you're just going to tutor everything.
A non-black card. So.
Yeah. That is a good point. Yeah.
Unless you're running mono-black like me.
Correct. But moving on, we got the Lorien Brooch being another version of the Trailblazer's Boots. For those who aren't familiar with Trailblazer's Boots, it's an artifact equipment that comes down for two colorless mana. Equipped creature has none basic Island Walk, and it equips for two.
If I'm not mistaken, this is supposed to be like a promo.
Okay.
One of the promo cards. It's gonna be in the deck, like in the set, but this is just one of the promo cards that they're gonna be showing.
I would kind of hope that this appears in draft boosters, because I think it'd be pretty interesting for draft, because we've already seen like a few non basic lands, and we're gonna be coming up on another one in a minute. Which actually, if you don't have anything else to say about the Trailblazer's Boots, we'll segue on to the next one. Would you like to take it?
The Shire. So, it's a legendary land. The Shire enters the battlefield tapped unless you control a legendary creature. You can tap it to add a green. You can also pay one and a green and tap it. Tap an untapped creature you control and create a food token. So it has a little flavor text. You must start somewhere and have some roots, and all the soil in the Shire is deep. Now that's Mary. I like this card. It's pretty simple for a legendary land. I also, in terms of design wise, I really enjoy niche lands and not generically powerful ones. So this one fits that theme.
How so? You're just talking about how like it comes untapped if you control legendary, or like what?
No, the food aspect of it.
Oh, okay, I get you. I also think it's pretty cool. For example, a deck kind of like any of the Jota decks, or back in the day, you know, rest in peace when you would run a Golos deck. And being able to have the different colored lands, this helps out a lot. Just having, you know, the equivalent of a forest, but it's also a legendary, like, permanent, so which might be relevant for, like, other reasons. I don't know. Really cool stuff. I would also like you to take the next one, because it's right around your alley of, like, color combination stuffs.
Yeah. Speaking of just a little side note, I was looking at my decks, and I was like, wow, I don't have a green, like, a proper just green deck. I don't have a proper blue deck. Because I have Ozgear red white, I have Ayara, which is black, and I just made a mono white deck. And I was even thinking of making a mono red deck. It was like, oh wait, I'm very focused on Mardu colors right now.
Yeah. Huh. It's pretty cool.
So it was just very interesting just to note that down. Anyways, Frodo, Sauron's Bane. We saw this card being teased with a different art style. The different art style was already shown, and it connects with four cards, actually.
Mm-hmm.
It connects with an alternate art of Samwise the Stouthearted, an alternate art of Gollum Patient Plotter, and the alternate art of Frodo, Sauron's Bane, and one of the many alternate arts of the One Ring, which we'll talk about. Frodo Sauron's Bane, one white for a 1/2, legendary creature, halfling citizen. You pay a hybrid white-black, two hybrid white-black. If Frodo Sauron's Bane is a citizen, it becomes a halfling scout with base power and toughness 2/3 and lifelink. And then you can pay black-black-black. If Frodo is a scout, it becomes a halfling rogue. And when this creature deals combat damage to a player, that player loses the game if the ring has tempted you 4 or more times this game. Otherwise, the ring tempts you. This is... I'm a very big... for long-time watchers of the podcast, I'm a very fan of commander damage. I think it's very difficult to pull off. A lot of the time, it's whoever makes it look easy, hats off to you. I always end up killing one person with commander damage and then dying. So this is a great way to just Frodo. Oh, I was tempted 4 times. Frodo is active and now I can kill someone.
Yeah,
like it is very, very, very. Terrifying, especially with you tap key to the city, make it unblockable, someone's dying. So again, this card's power level will depend on how strong the ring tempts you mechanic is.
Correct.
But I don't think it's gonna see modern play unless the mechanic is like super broken. Depending on how strong or how easy the mechanic is to activate, because that's black, 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 Legacy might even play this.
I see what you mean.
Because it's a 1/2.
The thing is, this guy costs 6 mana, essentially, if you're trying to go for the last effect, though.
Which is why I mentioned Legacy, because you get access to Dark Ritual.
Good point. Still 6 mana, that's kind of... Well, I mean, yeah, never mind. You can just basically Dark Ritual twice and just get it right, like, pop it right off. But getting tempted by the ring 4 times, like, even for, like, Legacy standards, unless we have, like, some cheap way to do so, maybe not.
It all depends, again, on how strong the mechanic is.
Mm-hmm.
If you really want it, then might be worth it.
About to find out, hopefully. But next up, unless you have anything else you want to say about Frodo.
No.
Next up, we got Gandalf the Grey. He comes out for 3, 1 blue, 1 red. He's a 3/4 Avatar Wizard. He lets you cast... Oh, no, not lets you. Whenever you cast an instant or sorcery spell, you have to choose one of the 4 modes that has not already been chosen. So you may tap or untap target permanent. You deal 3 damage to each opponent, and you copy target instant or sorcery spell you control. You may choose new targets for the copy. And the last one, I'm sorry, it's put Gandalf on the top of its owner's library. Oh, Gandalf. One of the first things that came to mind, obviously the thing that's like super obvious that just, you know, hits you in the face, right, is that you can cast three spells in a turn until Gandalf has to go back to your hand, which can sound like a kind of a huge downside initially. But then if you think about it, you know, someone's going to kill your like Gandalf, cast three cantrips, put it back into your hand. Doesn't sound too terrible, you know, because you still get to put him down for five.
I mean, you can choose one that hasn't been chosen. You don't need to cast all three. You can just you cast one and put him on top.
That is true.
He's always true. He always has protection, which I want to mention. This card is the most flavor win of like a flavor win card we have seen so far. You get three random effects and then Gandalf says peace and leaves. You get like all these effects.
They're not random. He just has like three random, not random, but he has three things he can pull out of his hat until he's like, well, that's it.
Like, but like seriously think about it. If Gandalf just read at least one of these abilities, if he just had one of them, he'd be broken. Every time you cast a spell, you copy it. Every time you cast a spell, three damage to each opponent. Every time you cast a spell, tap or untap something, he'd be broken. Would he not?
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely.
But the fact that he has three powerful abilities
but they can
that he can't repeat
once.
And then just dips. That's perfect. That's peak right there. That's peak writing and design.
Hell yeah. I do also want to mention, and like, you know, when the other thing that I was trying to get to, like, initially about the Gandalf card before we got into all the effectum of bobbers, is the fact that this is absolutely bonkers with the cat.
Yes.
Displacer Kitten will make it so that, oh, I don't know, just copy the same spell over and over and just not worry about it again. You just keep dealing three damage every time you cast something. Like, the cat just is absolutely ridiculous with Gandalf. That's just
look,
about it.
I tap my mana vault for three mana. I cast a cantrip. I untap it. I blink Gandalf. Like I have just three mana floating and just start generating mana. It's like the cat could do that as well. You just target the mana vault in this case. But like you could do different cool stuff with him before just having to reset him by a blink.
Alternate the effects and everything, and just it's insane. Absolutely insane.
So
you just deal three. You can probably just deal three damage on the first spell, then just untap your mana vault on the second one, reset the Gandalf in that like second spell, and then just do the thing. Like it's absolutely insane.
So, we got. I really want to read the last one, but let me read the first one right now. Mount Doom, legendary land. You pay one life and you add a red or a black. You can pay one black and a red, tap it, and each opponent that deals one. Mount Doom deals one damage to each opponent. Or you can pay seven mana, five black and red, tap it, sacrifice Mount Doom and a legendary artifact. Choose up to two creatures, then destroy the rest.
Nice.
I don't like that this is a mythic.
Correct.
Its effect is very strong.
This could easily be a rare, or honestly, it would still feel like a trash rare, to be honest. But it, you know, I guess it fits into the rare cycle of like, you know, the Shire over here and stuff like that. Like it's unnecessary where it is, but
yeah.
Okay, I guess I can kind of understand why they made it a mythic, because it's essentially a pain land that happens to be legendary.
And with upside.
Yeah, like I can get that, but I just still, I'm... The effect is just not that powerful. Like, the dealing one damage to each opponent is cool. Like, you know, if you have nothing else to do with your mana, it's a way to just make sure that the table is getting pinged. I think this is a really good card for the Warhammer commander. I forget his name. The one that Gomez uses. The
Abaddon?
One. Yeah, Abaddon the spoiler.
Yeah.
Just deal one damage to everybody. That's 3 mana off of your spells, right?
Yes. Like three mana spells have cascade.
Yeah. So, you know, I think that's potentially really cool. But other than that, I don't, it's just a pain land. And I don't enjoy it as much. I don't know. Rather have like it in the same slot as the Shire. That way it's like a cycle of legendary lands. Hopefully it'd be cool if we get a cycle of like the dual lands, like the like legendary pain lands, and then the legendary like monocolored lands. I think that would just look really cool. But moving on to the not yet as controversial as we could sit down and talk about, the One Ring. It comes down for 4 colorless mana. It's an artifact, a legendary artifact that is indestructible. When it enters the battlefield, if you cast it, you gain protection from everything until your next turn. So essentially, the fairy's protection almost, nah, not really, because it's just protection, not the thing, but you guys get the point. At the beginning of your upkeep, you lose 1 life for each burden counter on the One Ring. You can tap it and add a burden counter to the One Ring, then draw a card for each burden counter on the One Ring. That sounds fun.
So, let's talk. Could you click on the card?
Click on the card. See if the other thing pops up.
Let's see how many reversions this card has.
It's not popping up over here.
Oh, it's not popping up. So, if I'm not mistaken, this card has 3-4 versions. One of the versions is just like the Soul Ring, is a serialized version.
Hold on. I'm popping it up in a second. Don't spoil it just yet. let me do some modification over here. One second. Stop sharing here. Crab. Here we go. Gonna. Oh, so really cool thing. Yeah, keep going, JP. You're good.
So, it's a serialized version of the One Ring, you know. But the serialized versions, there's only one of that one card. They are literally making
the One Ring.
Only one of them.
Enough. I think I actually like made a joke about that last podcast too. I was like, oh, could you imagine they just make like the one copy of like the One Ring? It would be so funny, like a cool collector's item.
Yeah.
And when we specifically went like, no, that would be dumb. Like, come on.
And they went ahead and did it.
Oh man. That have you been sticking around long enough? Like this podcast has a funny thing about making a joke and then it completely coming true and then everyone in the room being disappointed that it did. It's a history of it now.
Well, again, I'm kind of disappointed that this exists, but again, it's the type of thing that's just like, it's not for me.
Mm-hmm.
This clearly wasn't made for me and wasn't made with me in mind. When I say that, I mean me as a customer, as in not the Wizards of the Coast has mentioned, especially with the Secret Lair, Universes Beyond and other stuff, not every product needs to be catered for everyone. Some mm-hmm. products are catered to other people. Pioneer decks are for Pioneer players. Modern decks, the modern format. Commander decks for Commander players. You know, and this is for collectors. What I am hoping is that Jimmy 10-year-old is like, oh, hey, I love Lord of the Rings, and their parents see this and decide to buy them this card, this collector booster, and then he just kind of, oh look, it looks so pretty. I have a, it's the One Ring.
Yeah.
And just kitchen table magic plays with it. No sleeves, just raw dogging it.
Oh man.
That'd be beautiful. It'd be karmic justice.
Honestly, everything in my body would just love it if someone in the community got this and they just took it to like an active volcano somewhere and just dropped it in, or like something along those lines, you know, just to make it all go full circle. And just I think this is definitely, ironically enough, like it is a great like symbol of greed and destroying it, you know, like how it should canonically go should definitely be the way to go about it, just because again that would be like the huge like nerd accomplishment, right? you want to take a gander at how it at what price point this might open up at?
I'm starting the low ball at 30k.
Starting a low ball at 30. I was thinking 100k, but just because like it's the kind of thing that if someone pulls it in a booster, they're going to definitely try to post it at the highest price possible, you know? Like if someone is looking to sell this, if anyone would get their hands on it and be either crazy enough or smart enough to sell it, whichever one of the sides of the boat you're on, right? I would just definitely try to go like as ridiculous as possible with it. It's the only copy of this thing in existence. It only comes in collector's boosters, which, you know, it's like the random chance of it's the one booster you bought, it's the entire like box you bought, or you ripped through like 8 cases of the thing and didn't like find anything close to the darn ring. So I would just go for 100k. Like I'd put it, like if I got my hands on it, I'd post it for $1 million. You want the only copy of this card in existence? Cool. Just make me a millionaire. It's all yours. Just make it prohibitively expensive so either nobody can buy it or like someone who just really doesn't need the money gives you the money. That's what I say. But since you had mentioned the other arts, I was able to find the One Ring in one of its alternate arts. Give me one second. Stop here. Found the One Ring in its other art. You can see. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, that's Gollum. Gollum's hand. If you find the other art of Gollum, it is him throwing himself into the lava, trying to catch the ring.
Let me see if I can find something else. Hold on. I'm trying to see if I can find the whole picture, because here it is. All right.
Here you go.
Just not cooperate. Yeah, I got the Twitter post. I'm just trying to like get the image isolated, which of course is gonna be a pain.
I sent you one just in case.
All right,
present perfect. It. It's in the general chat for ours.
Gotcha. Here we go. Let me go over here. What? No, that's not the right button. Remember, people, we are live, so, you know, things happen. Here we go. So we got Frodo, Sauron's Bane. We got Samwise, the Stouthearted. you know, just the moment in which Frodo drops the rings. And Sam is, you know, trying to, I don't know, either encourage him or stop him at this point. It looks like he's being stopped rather than encouraged, but let's go. And then you got Gollum diving in for the one ring over here at the bottom. It's like the whole Mount Doom scene, and I think it looks absolutely beautiful. I find it kind of fun that the ring in itself looks very much like the ring does in the movies, like aesthetically. But it still has, like, I don't know, like, at least in this specific frame, the ring looks like it's almost in a different art style than the rest of the characters. And that kind of gives it, like, a quality that makes it look like it's in motion. Kind of like when you're watching something in 2D and then, like, the 2D object with the really cool movement, like, pops in. It's kind of like the feel that that it kind of evokes for me. I don't know if, like, anyone has a similar feeling there, but if you do, you should probably pop it down in the comments and we can talk about it a little bit.
It kind of pops.
Yeah. All right. Anything else you want to say on the One Ring, JP?
No, this is... yes, actually, there's a lot more to discuss. There's a card called Mind Over Matter. It's a reserve list card. It was already a very expensive card. And it started spiking because people were like, oh my god, I go infinite with it! When you can go infinite with Mind Over Matter goes infinite with anything that taps and draws.
Yeah.
So, Mind Over Matter goes infinite with a lot of things. Not just the ring, but people were just like going crazy and started making a spike. And the second thing is, there might be a modern deck that may be using the One Ring.
Ooh, I have not heard of that one. Please tell me.
So, what you have is one Emery in play.
Mm-hmm.
You cast the One Ring. Gain protection from everything until your next turn. Mm-hmm. So, you fog. Next turn. You cast the One Ring.
Oh.
To the graveyard.
What are you going to be sacrificing it with? Because KCI is banned, so.
No. The One Ring, it's a legendary artifact. It has to sacrifice itself.
Oh, I see what you mean now. Okay.
I cast it with Emery, the One Ring. Oh, look. I just looped infinite.
Infinite protection.
Infinite fogs. Now, how you stop this is killing Emery, and especially with Fury, Solitude, the domain, the zoo domain with Tribal Flames, Path to Exile, Lightning Bolt. There's a lot of kill spells. When you could trigger a Fatal Push and you could kill it as well. Like, there's a lot of spells that could kill Emery. But otherwise, other than protecting Emery, that's it. You just have fog forever. And the neat thing is, when you play it, you tap it and draw a card, right?
Yeah.
Next upkeep, you lose one life. Then before you recycle it for the next One Ring, you can tap it and draw two cards. Yeah. Then cast the next ring and tap to draw a card. So I tap it, I draw a card, I pass. Or I wait for your turn, tap it, draw a card, right?
Yeah.
In my turn, now it's my turn. I tap it. So I draw for the turn. I tap it. I draw two cards, right?
Mm-hmm.
Play the next one and tap it to draw another card. You just drew four cards.
Yeah.
And have protection from everything. Again.
You have protection
and you just lost one life on your upkeep.
Yeah. For the price of one life and four mana.
So the price of one life and four cards, you get... And it's like one life, you get four cards, four mana. You need Emery in play, but that's not that hard. Especially because she's a cost reductor for herself.
Yeah.
And you get all that value for four mana. All you need is to loop the One Rings with each other. Now, if this breed makes a deck, then it'd be nice, be cool, be interesting, but I'm not sure if there's a way, like, because Emery and the One Ring, just you fog eternally and you draw a lot of cards.
Yeah, but you still need a win con. And if all of your slots are just concentrated on protecting Emry and your ring, well,
I guess you could play Thassa's Oracle. Just time your opponent out.
That is kind of funny, not gonna lie. The fact that it just makes Thassa's Oracle like super viable.
That'd be funny. And just time your opponent out and just draw your deck. They eventually need to find an answer for Emry, but if you keep using all your resources to protect Emry, because the thing is, a friend pointed out, oh, they'll just destroy the One Ring. The One Ring is indestructible.
Yeah. Makes it a real pain in the ass.
It's really difficult to deal with.
Though, again, a lot of decks that are running white were actually running the White March, so it might not be too difficult. It's just that putting five mana into it is a bit of a pain. So unless you can catch the... your Emry opponent tapped out and without free answers in hand. Yeah, but that's going to be pretty difficult if they're drawing four cards in a turn. That's actually a pretty like interesting point to make there.
Other than that, that's pretty much it for the One Ring. There's a lot of talk about it, but that's pretty much of what I wanted to share.
Yeah, I mean, what else can you really say about it? I mean, it goes infinite with like a billion different things. You can use like a billion different ways to put more counters on it if you want to draw more cards in a turn. Probably ways of like mitigating the life loss. But other than that, I don't know.
So I have of course, I just mentioned I have Ozgear.
Mm-hmm.
One other thing is, I've been debating if I would like to play that card in Ozgear. 4 mana, not that bad. Protection from everything, but it's you gain, not permanence, and I kind of want to protect Ozgear.
Exactly.
The life loss is negligible. The drawing cards is always good. And at worst, like it's an artifact, so I can just copy it, double it.
You're not going to be able to really, like,
no,
copy
I copy it. I make 2 copies. I sacrifice 1. I keep 1 copy. Anyways.
Yeah.
And it's indestructible. It's kind of hard to remove anyways.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think it's worth it for how fast my deck is. Mm-hmm. Because 4 mana for 1 card, then next turn for 2 cards is not as fast as just having a memory jar and drawing 7.
Yeah,
5 more, and then drawing 21, basically 5 mana for 21 cards.
Yeah,
10 mana for 21 cards technically, but
that's still pretty insane. I mean, a mana per card is good. Like, you know, you're going 2 mana for 2 cards per mana, so that's still pretty solid.
Yeah.
Let's go back here to like our last few remaining cards. You mentioned you wanted the very last one, so I'm gonna go ahead and take that next one. Give me 1 second. Wait a minute. There we go. Let's go over here. And we're back. So next up we got Sauron the Lidless Eye. A Rakdos. He's a Rakdos Avatar Horror. Comes down for 3 colorless mana, 1 black and 1 red. When Sauron the Lidless Eye enters the battlefield, gain control of target creature an opponent controls until the end of turn. Untap it, it gains haste until the end of the turn. You can pay 1 colorless, 1 black and 1 red. Creatures you control get +2/+0 until the end of turn. Each opponent loses 2 life. I enjoy it. I don't. There isn't part anything that I would like say like that. It's like, oh, it looks particularly amazing or strong to me. But I really do enjoy it. I enjoy kind of like the flavorful chunk of like taking control of your opponent's creatures, using them against them. I like that his ability is not only a buff, but that if you can find a way to just kind of generate a buck ton of mana, you're not only buffing your creatures, but also affecting your opponent's life totals at the same time, which I find just really, really cool. And if I don't know if I already mentioned, but Sauron is a 4/4, which, like, goddamn.
I mean, he's big. Someone mentioned that this is like the one of the starter kit Sauron. It's not the Sauron from the Commander, because the Commander Sauron is gonna be Grixis.
I can see that, yeah.
Because, you know, knowledge, evil, Grixis, yeah.
Yeah, he's just pulling off the Nicol Bolas, or rather, Nicol Bolas was pulling off the Sauron, so.
Yes.
I like it. Ah, and I just enjoy, like, the flavor text. There's an eye in the dark tower that does not sleep. I think it's, if this is supposed to be Sauron, like, once he's already, like, you know, a giant flaming eyeball, rather than, like, Sauron from, like, back in the day, this is, like, fine. Because, you know, again, when Sauron is, like, up in the tower, I feel like, you know, he's pretty nerfed in comparison to walking the earth and mauling everything down, and also on top of that using his magics. But up next, we have Aragorn and Arwen wed. Honestly, I liked the... Was it Portuguese or Spanish when we originally saw this?
Yeah, Portuguese.
Like, I liked how the Portuguese version sounded better. Like, just wed sounds very flat, but whatever. Comes down for 6, so that's 4 colorless mana, 1 green, 1 white. They have Vigilance. They're a human elf noble. Whenever they enter the battlefield or attack, you put a 1/1 counter on each other creature you control. You gain 1 life for each other creature you control. They literally just took 2 cards that, if I'm not mistaken, cost 3. Put it into a card, gave it a keyword, and made it a creature. That's literally it. Not exactly the most complicated design I've ever seen. A trash mythic, so I'm really hoping that it's in the commander decks rather than actually being in the set. And that's all I have to say about it. About it. So, JP.
This is a dud mythic. Yeah. It just pumps.
Oh yeah, no. I was saying that it is your time, so you can move on to that.
Yes. Yeah, we moved on because there's not much to say about Aragorn and Arwen. Tom Bombadil.
Yes.
White, blue, black, red, green for a 4/4 legendary creature, God Bard. As long as there are 4 more lore counters among sagas you control, Tom Bombadil has hexproof and indestructible.
Correct.
Whenever the final chapter of ability of a saga you control resolves, reveal the cards from the top of your library until reveal a saga card. Put that card onto the battlefield and the rest in the bottom of your library in any random order. This ability triggers only once each turn. I really like this card.
Correct.
He's so fun.
I like that by just doing very generally what the deck wants to do, you can set this to happen every single turn.
What's more interesting is they've printed a lot of proliferate shenanigans, and putting a lore counter on an opponent's turn on one of your sagas.
Yeah.
That's interesting.
That's really fun. It's just potential, like, what is it? You just look for... Oh, you until you reveal a saga
you just
card.
Reveal
and
you until
it onto
you reveal.
Battlefield. Yeah. Ooh.
This is the second most flavorful card. Right there. The flavor is on point. So
he's a storyteller. He's a bard.
Yes. So he would just not shut up. Just keep on talking about stories. And it's just perfect. For his story. I really like the flavor of this card. Other than that, it's mechanic wise, so this is a saga. So I was the other day I was looking at the white green, it's a white green saga legendary creature that came out in Kamigawa Neon Dynasty. if I'm not mistaken.
I wonder if there's been any price differences since the spoiling of Tom.
Give me a bit. Satsuki the Living Lore.
Mm-hmm.
Still 11 cents, but she has an ability called that says tap and put a lore counter on each saga you control. Activate only as a sorcery. When Satsuki the Living Lore dies, choose up to one, and her options are return target saga or enchantment creature you control to its owner's hand. Return target saga card from your graveyard to your hand. She's a 2-mana 1/3. This will be very, very nice addition for that deck. And I was just, when I was looking at her, I was like, wow, a saga deck. That'd be very interesting. But then when her colors limited her, her trigger is a die trigger. Not many white green sagas want to be dying. I want to be destroying creatures or have her die. You have a few ways in white to sacrifice and a few ways in green to sacrifice, but you don't want the green ones require like high power to draw cards, and you don't want to be doing that with a 1/3. And also, you don't want to be doing that in general with her type of effect. So it was just lacking.
It's fine. Look, just fix everything by sticking Safi in it. That'll be fine.
Yeah. Tom Bombadil just does the saga thing perfectly. Have you seen his alternate art?
I have not, actually. Let's go look it up and get it for the viewers then.
His alternate art is amazing. It'll look so beautiful in foil.
I'm a little bit excited and would try to make this deck depending on, like, you know, how things go.
I've never made a 5-color deck. And he's very, very tempting.
Yeah.
Because one, how can you be competitive with this deck? One of my problems is that I keep, like, I like to optimize and keep optimizing and optimizing and optimizing because I want my decks to be as best as they can be within a certain framework. Because some decks I'm not just going to make them CEDH, but I like to have them high power so I can do a lot of stuff that they already want to be doing. But how do you do that with Tom? You don't. You just play a lot of sagas and have their effects and have a lot of value and just have a lot of fun.
Unfortunately, I couldn't find a higher quality one, but... once again, I was able to somewhat find it. Got Tom Bombadil in his radiant ass form.
Wow, yeah. That in foil will look amazing.
If only I could make this look prettier, but unfortunately, if I zoom in, it just gets a little ruined. But, it looks so good. I'm really hoping that there's, like, a really good distinction once, like, you know, we get down to the foiling, right? Really good distinction in between, like, the borders that are in, like, the Elven script.
And I just want that center to be, like, very, very bright in foil.
Yes. Like, a really, really bright, like, white center, and then have the inscriptions, like, in a really, like, in a gold color that'll really stand out. Oof. Like, this would look insane. Wow. But yeah. At least so far, that is all we got in terms of the Lord of the Rings spoilers. We went through each and every single one of them. I almost can't believe we've been around here for an hour talking about these beautiful cards. But I think that, you know, once we get past the art and the card effects, there is another important aspect to talk about, which of course can't be untalked about. When talking about Magic the Gathering, and it is the price of the sets. If I'm not mistaken, since cards started getting spoiled, there have been some changes to that pricing, but I'm not sure exactly where it was that we saw them last time, at least in terms of pricing. Give me one sec. because last time we checked, the collector's booster so far is being is being sold for like around $400, or at least in like pre-sale, right?
Something like that, yeah.
The trend so far with collector's booster sets and stuff like that is that usually after some time, all of these will they drop in price like pretty heavily, right? But I'm not too confident about those price drops with this set because of what it is, really, right? Because it's a huge collector set. Have we gotten any news on how is that they're gonna handle this, or how do I say this? How many printings we're gonna get of this Universes Beyond stuff? Like, do they just keep printing until they run out of a license? Is this just like a limited run thing? Like, what's the?
I haven't actually looked that up, because if I'm not mistaken, it is not a limited print run. Because the Warhammer ones were not limited print run. Actually, no, because the Warhammer ones were supposed to be not limited print run, but then they were, right?
Exactly.
I'm not sure how this is gonna work.
That's the thing. It's like Wizards has gone back on their word so many times, and they've just messed with the trust of their community so hard that I just don't like it's all speculation no matter where you stand on it. But at least for now, let's go ahead and take a look at what our product prices are going to be looking at. Again, this is TCG player stuff. Until the set is released, you can assume that these prices essentially aren't real. But they are still going to be scarily close to the real thing. Because, for example, we have the gift bundle, which is going to be, which is so far going for $115. We have the collector's booster box, which you already talked about, was in the $400 range. Absolutely insane. Like, we're talking about how many is it? It's 12 boosters, was it?
Yeah.
It's 12 boosters for $400, man. Like, man, if that's what you like, if that's what you're into, go for it. If you have the disposable income, go for it. But honestly, I would, like, everyone I've like that has asked me about, like, hey, is it going to be worth getting like those new commander decks? Is it going to be worth getting those, like, you know, like anything from that set? I just tell them, hey man, the prices are ridiculous at this point. I'd tell the same thing I would tell everybody, is just go ahead and get yourself the singles you need. Really cool product, don't get me wrong, but just same issues that we keep having, like, again and again. We're looking at the Tales of Middle-earth bundle, or for those who aren't like familiar with the new lingo, this used to be what they what now like fat packs have turned into. That's going to be running for around $60, which is around
a bit higher than like, what I thought it what usually it's around
it's
there.
It's usually $40, so you're looking at like $20 more expensive. I don't think this is as much of an egregious what's it called?
Bundles
like,
have always been a great buy.
Mm-hmm. Like, sometimes you'll definitely get dud bundles, because it has happened, but I think that with this set specifically, I think this is a really good buy. It doesn't hit you as hard as trying to get a set booster box for $230, but you're still getting enough value to just kind of like, man, feel good about your pulls, I guess. And it's not something like as ridiculous as the gift bundle, which is like the same amount of boosters that you're getting in the other bundle, but just, you know, shinier cards and better looking stuff. The pre-release boxes, I can't believe that they're retailing on like TCG player for $50, man.
I really do hope we go down back down to 30 because, you know, I don't know, like it's pre-release, you know? Like I just feel like that, like even for like crazy sets like this, I feel like stuff like pre-release material and certain like products like that should have a standard price, you know what I mean?
I understand, yeah.
Like there should be certain things that are always constant. And pre-release prices, I think, should be one of those things, but that's just personal opinion, right? Can't persuade the opinion of the higher ups at Wizards. We got our Universes Beyond draft booster box, which is currently running, being estimated at $200. Again, just buy singles, man. If your draft booster box is going for $200, buy singles. We are seeing over here the price for each collector booster is estimated to be at $40 since we're looking at a $400 price tag. We are looking at our there's going to be like the starter kit, which is going to bring two decks of like, you know, pretty basic Magic the Gathering decks for people who are essentially using this opportunity to get into the IP for the first time. The Magic the Gathering, so great product if you know someone that likes Lord of the Rings and that you want to get them to learn or to play Magic. And one of my favorite products because of what it is but not what it contains, the Magic the Gathering Universes Beyond the Lord of the Rings Tales of Middle-earth Jumpstart Booster Box. I'm hoping that the Jumpstart Booster Box product is going to have some unique stuff in it. I'm hoping that it's going to have a lot of the stuff that got either scrapped for the set or that just didn't make it into the set. And just generally hoping that it's a better Jumpstart product than what we've gotten before. Like, I don't got much to say on that end anymore, but it just, you know, I'm just hoping that it's a product that stands out a bit more, because it's hard for a lot of these products, especially Jumpstart, to kind of have any impact when you launch, you know, literally like almost a dozen products for every release. It's like 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 plus 4 commander decks. That's 12 products, or well, I guess you can maybe put it down to around 8 products if you count, like, you know, commander decks as the one thing and the set and the and the draft booster boxes their own things, just being the set. But, you know, it's a lot of product. It's a lot of product, and I just don't know what we're doing with so much of it. So, JP, anything else you might want to add to tonight's podcast?
Nope. Mostly this, just excited. I was going through the sagas right now, mm-hmm. and truth be told, they're not good.
No.
like there's a few of them that are like, oh yeah, this one's okay. This is okay, but like none of them are like absolute includes. They're just a bunch of cards that you just have when they just do stuff. It's interesting to think about. The Bomb Bundle would just kind of do stuff, and you never know what you're gonna get, and that's kind of fun.
I get the feeling that the more optimal versions of Bombadil are basically just gonna be running like the most OP sagas to just try to close out games, essentially. Like using
you're probably just gonna have a lot of tutors, tutor out a saga, or like a cheap saga.
And then just five color good stuff, everything
make sure
else.
Make sure once it finishes, you activate Bomb Bundle and reveal until reveal one of your powerful sagas. So probably not running many of the sagas. You're just gonna run like the best ones, the very most powerful ones to try to cheat in.
Mm-hmm.
The trick here being like, how can you turbo him out? Like when I mean turbo him out, I mean like how fast can you play him because he is all five colors, in addition to when you play him, if the next time you draw a card, so in your next draw step, will you trigger a saga? It's very difficult, like a very difficult thing to think about.
You know what? Sometimes, like, just like as another random comment to add at the end of this, every time I see a five color commander come out, it's really, really difficult not to instantly try and compare him to Kenrith or some of the already available five color options.
Well, I get the sentiment, but I mentioned earlier with the legendary lands, it's just for legendary creatures in general, I don't like generically good commanders. They are boring. My playstyle is like sacrificing and returning stuff and doing stuff. I could play Korvold, but he's boring. All he does is sacrifice, I draw. He's very consistent and very generic in terms of what he does. So I personally find that very boring. And maybe some other viewers might disagree with me, because they probably think, oh, but I have a Korvold land deck. But Korvold isn't really made for lands. You could make him for lands, as you could make any deck for any other purpose. But his general purpose, I try to focus on his general, how best to use and how to best use and abuse abilities. Then with the Korvold example, he's just very generic in terms of what you want to be doing. So Kenrith is the most generic of all the generic commanders. I think Golos was less generic than him, and they banned Golos because he was too generic. So I am very, very glad that a five color deck, it has a niche, has a very specific thing it wants to be doing. It can do the five color thing and like do a lot of cool stuff with the five colors, but it has a theme.
I would even say that it's like it's really cool when you have creatures like, for example, Sign of the Ur Dragon, which follow tribal themes, they're five colors, but they still have like a really specific like strategy in mind, even if it is just big dragon creature go dumb and swing.
It's funny how you mentioned that, because I feel like the Ur Dragon is very generic, but Scion of the Ur Dragon is very interesting.
Correct.
Because Scion puts creatures in your graveyard. Now you're suddenly like you're copying them. Now you want specific abilities to copy onto your Scion. Maybe stuff like Quicksilver Dragon that can change the target of a spell or ability, so you can protect
your Scion.
So that's always gonna be like a silver bullet you have in your deck. And the cool thing is you send it to your graveyard. So you're suddenly into like this Voltron style commander that suddenly turns into a Dragon Reanimator. I find that very interesting.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, you have your dragon. It's just, dragon spells cost one less.
Yep.
And then when you do play him, he's just like, draw cards and play something for free.
Mm-hmm.
Which is, again, pretty generic. Is it something good to do? Yes.
Yes. Strong?
It's very strong. But is it generic? Yes, it is generic. It's like there's nothing particular about what it is doing. And maybe that's the thing with five colors. Because five colors has all colors, then having something that is generic makes sense, because it has something of everything.
Mm-hmm.
But I personally, maybe that's why I haven't made a five color deck, because I really like niche. And maybe that's why I really think Bombadil is like interesting and fun. Is he good? Maybe not, because there's no, it's like, I'm just looking at the sagas, and the truth be told, there's just not many that good, that not many good sagas.
Yeah.
But it's interesting.
All right. Well, at least on my end, I got nothing more to say about these beautiful chunks of cardboard. Any other opinions, hot or maybe just kind of lukewarm, takes that you might want to share?
I think already has said is like five color bad, white is in, but white not that bad.
So with that, we'll be leaving you guys to think about, to meditate on the takes that that JP has left us with tonight. Meditate on the pricing of this new and upcoming product and how fantastic all of the art and flavor and everything in it is. And we'll be signing off. But more importantly, remember that you can find our buddy Orengo. Look him up on the Googles, look him up on IMBD, Alejandro Orengo. He's a great director, and while, you know, we're all always making jokes about him being like the Oscar winner and the great award winner, I've had the chance to see one of his films. I still have like one in my backlog which I haven't touched. Sorry, Orengo, I love you. And I enjoy his work. I got the opportunity to just, like, you know, watch him work on an occasion, and I just love everything that everyone in this podcast does. So check him out. He does 15 in Richport. He does a bunch of other podcasts. Again, IMBD is going to be your best tool to find everything this man has done. John, like the guy who basically just helped us all get this together. You can find him in Subtitles Required and a bunch of other podcasts he has as well. You can also just pop on over to the Cardboard Cave podcast. We'll shoot you links for everything, so you'll be all set there. You can find each and every one of us here at the Cardboard Cave podcast. You can find me over at my Twitch every once in a while, and you can interact with each and every one of us on our socials. Real quick, don't forget to head over to Alter Sleeves. Just make your commander look hella cool, hella pretty. Give your Timna and Thrasios, like, you know, big mommy milkers, so that everybody can be the envy of the playgroup. And next week, if everything is going fine and dandy, we're going to have Joseph Johnson, aka Black Mito, from Table Talk Docs, join us for, you know, being our first guest of 2023. It'll be like, that would be next week, so that would be March 22nd. So put that date on your calendars and join us, so you can see us either get whooped by Black Nito or watch us whoop Black Nito. Who knows? Also remember that we have our fantastic merch store, Enphase Comics, and much more. We got some really cool taglines around there. We got, you know, our only land shirt, revolutionizing your mulligan with or without the tagline. You can get the Will You Pay the One shirt to just have, you know, every time you put on your shirt and you show up with your mono blue deck, you can remind your opponents, hey, will you pay the one? And you just remind them of how annoying you are everywhere you go. And with that, thank you very much for joining us. It's been a fantastic episode. I hope everyone has a wonderful rest of your night, and that you guys keep supporting us. Remember to follow us on all of our social media as Cardboard Cave Podcast, and have an awesome rest of your night, and see you in the next one.
Remember to follow, like, subscribe to be notified, and as well listen to us on all major audio platforms. Thanks for joining us.